Welcome to a live edition of Jaws of Justice right here on KKFI 90.1 FM on your dial. I'm your host, Melvin Merritt, and in the studio with me right now is Judy Morgan. She is the 24th District Rep, and we're going to be talking about some things that she's implementing and some of the things that she's trying to get into the legislation. And also, we're waiting on Brandon Ellerton, and he should be in the studio in a few minutes. But in the meantime, I'd like to welcome Judy Morgan, 24th Rep, to the studio.
Thank you very much. Glad to be here. I don't know if you know, but KKFI is actually in my legislative district.
Okay.
Yeah, so I'm really happy you guys are here.
Okay, that sounds good. One of the first questions I would like to ask you, Ms. Morgan, is, I should say Representative Ms. Morgan.
You can call me Judy.
Okay, Judy. And tell us a little bit about the criminal justice that you're working on, some of the legislation that you...
Well, there were some criminal justice bills passed in the last session. One of them actually dealt with sex trafficking of young people. And it actually added to the legislation that currently exists that you also cannot advertise children for sex trafficking, and it'll be a crime to do that. It's really a pretty serious issue. There's the Department of Justice says about 300,000 young people across the United States are involved in sex trafficking every year, and St. Louis City actually is one of the top 20 cities in the United States for sex trafficking. And a lot of the kids that get involved in sex trafficking, it actually happens at a pretty young age, like 12, 13, 14 years old. Mm. And I think this came about as an issue, and I had never heard of this website. It's called Backpage.com.
Backpage.com.
And they actually, it's believed, actually engage in some of this allowing of people advertising for sex trafficking on the Internet. And our own Claire McCaskill, who's a senator in Washington, D.C., actually is pursuing this issue. Mm. And has subpoenaed Backpage.com to come before a committee to testify.
Now, is this an undercover type a site that young people are getting into and getting drawn into sex trafficking, or is it something that they want to do in terms of getting into it?
Well, I think it's probably more that they don't necessarily want to do it, but mm-hmm. they're drawn into it. It's a website that does a lot of different things, and some of them are legitimate, mm-hmm. but they also seem to be engaging in this advertising of sex trafficking. They're a multi-million dollar, big, lots of money.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a good bill, I thought, that we got passed, that now that it will also be a crime to actually advertise sex trafficking of kids on the Internet.
So what's the statistics in terms of Kansas City with young people as it relates to sex trafficking right here in the heart of Kansas City?
You know, I think it happens in Kansas City, but we're not in the top 20 cities like St. Louis City. St. Louis City is actually really a big, unfortunately, a very big spot for it.
Mm. So how do they get caught up in it? Because, see, I'm noticing it on the news, young girls about 13, 14 coming up missing. And the first thing that I think about, have they got caught up in sex trafficking mm-hmm. and disappearing like that?
I think sometimes they're runaway kids, that they're trying to get away from home, and mm-hmm. then they just end up getting involved in this mess, and then it's really hard to get out of it because there's a lot of intimidation, and they're scared.
Mm-hmm.
I think that one of the articles I read said that the reason Senator McCaskill got interested in the issue was because a young girl who was about 14 years old finally got away and showed up at, I think it was Barnes Noble, the big hospital there in St. Louis.
Mm-hmm.
And, she was hurt from just basically being abused as part of the sex trafficking. And that's what happened to her. She had just gotten caught up in it as a runaway kid.
Yeah, because there's one that has been on the air, the news, and she has been missing, I think, for 3 or 4 days or mm-hmm. so. And they haven't yet found her. And that, like I said, that's where my mind went to.
And it also is a problem, worldwide, too.
Mm.
And there are actually young girls that are brought in from other countries, too, that are involved in the sex trafficking trade. So it's not just a U.S. issue. It is across the whole United States.
What about, say, Hispanics that's coming in illegally? And I'm speaking about women.
Mm-hmm.
And has any of those have been caught up in that sex trafficking?
Yes, I think there have. I don't know the exact statistics on that, but yes, I think that that's an issue from really basically every country throughout the United States. I mean, throughout the world, rather. Mm-hmm. This is an issue that's happening. So it's something that we really need to pay attention to and stop from happening.
So how do you do, I mean, how do you work with the law enforcement in terms of getting this bill looked at or whatever you do on the floor?
Sure.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry. Well, actually, this bill was brought forth by a representative who is from the Springfield area, and it took 2 years to pass it. He brought it forth last year, and it almost made it through the session in 2015. The last part of the session, we kind of had a blow up in the Senate, and a lot of stuff didn't happen that last week of the session in 2015. So he brought it up again this year. It had. I don't think anybody in the House voted against it. It's you know a lot of times we hear about there is a lot of partisanship, where you know the majority and minority party differ very much on what they think about things. Mm-hmm. But there's some things that we really do all unite around, and this was one of those issues. It passed unanimously in the House.
Just to turn the corner, because we're going to open up the lines later on in another 5 or so minutes and see if anybody want to weigh in on this topic. But tell us a little bit more about what you're working on.
Well, one of the things I think that is just terrible that we have not passed in the Missouri legislature is Medicaid expansion. And that is something that, it's a way for low-income individuals to get health insurance. Right now in Missouri, if you're a childless adult, if you don't have kids, you don't qualify for Medicaid expansion at all unless you're disabled.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of adults who do not have kids and work in low-income jobs, they don't have any health insurance. You know, their employers don't provide health insurance. They don't make enough money to go out on the market and buy health insurance, and they don't qualify for the subsidies that. Through Obamacare.
Mm-hmm.
So these individuals don't have any health insurance, and Missouri, our state, has refused to buy into the federal program. It would be through a federal program. And initially, the feds would have paid 100% of the coverage of the health insurance, and over a period of time, it incrementally goes down to 90%. We've tried for 3 years to get it passed. We have not been able to do it. And this one is very much a partisan issue, where most of the minority party supports it and the majority party does not, for the most part. So, but it's something I just don't think we can give up on, because it's so important. It's smart to do in terms of economics. Medicaid expansion would actually bring 24,000 new jobs into Missouri. And, of course, I think it's the moral thing to do, because I think people should be able to have health insurance.
Yeah. Well, just in case you just tuned in and you're driving your automobile, you're in tune to KKFI 90.1 FM on your dial. And I'm talking with Miss Judy Morgan, and Representative Brandon Ellerton just made his way into the studio. So I want to welcome him to the studio, and glad to have you here.
Now, how you doing today?
Good, good. Glad you're here. So, we're going to just turn the corner just a little bit, but right now we're going to open up the line. But first, before we open up the lines, we want to ask Representative Brandon some of the things that you're working on, because I know that you're working on a lot of different issues.
Well, I'm actually going to bring it directly home. July the 7th, it would be a town hall meeting dealing with the Attorney General's Office, Department of Natural Resources, and we're currently still trying to get the Health Department on board. Are for those that have been living in between 31st Street, Cleveland to Lister, down to 27th Street. There's a lot of contamination that has been going out in that area.
Mm-hmm.
And if you give me just a minute, I will pull up the location,
sure,
too, because I just set up the town hall meeting.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll come back and...
Okay, but in the meantime, we're going to go ahead on and possibly open up some lines. You can call in. 816-931-5534. I say that line is 816-931-5534. You can call in and weigh in on this topic. And I'm talking to Representative Judy Morgan. She is the 24th district rep. And I'm talking with Representative Brandon Ellerton. And so he's going to be sharing some things that he is working on. And so, but in while he's adjusting his mic, I'm going to ask Judy some of the things that she could she reiterate what she was talking about before.
I was talking about Medicaid expansion and how important that is to pass it, and I know Brandon and I definitely agree on that one. And I'm hopeful that maybe this next year will be the year that we can do it and we will be able to provide health insurance coverage. It's basically folks that make less than 138% of the federal poverty level. And just to give you an idea, that's about $15,000 for an individual and about $32,000 for a family of four. But those are the very individuals. They're part of the working poor. They're hardworking folks. They have jobs, but they just don't have enough money to either buy insurance or their employers don't provide it for them.
That's interesting. Did you want to comment on that?
No, I actually agree with Representative Morgan 100%. It's actually shameful that we would do things to ultimately preserve the Second Amendment and further certain tax credits for corporations, but we don't believe that health care should be a right for citizens in this state. The fact that we haven't passed it is illogical because we're are literally leaving money on the table that's going to other states that citizens of this state are paying for, and we're not willing to use those dollars to provide health care for the citizens of this state. I don't understand any rational reason behind it, except for overt hate, and this comes from the president. And I think that's the ultimate reason why we haven't done anything but in the state of Missouri.
Speaking of health care, you know, because I noticed that some of my health care has changed, and I used to not have to worry about paying any office visits, and now I have to pay a copay. And I was employed with General Motors for almost 29 years. And so now all of that has changed. And what are you saying about the health care? Is it the people that have health care now and they're noticing that it's changing, or they have to pay more?
Well, it's both. The way the original Affordable Care Act was designed was it supposed to lower costs by the multitude of people that was getting on board with it. Mm-hmm. But since we haven't passed it in the states, it creates a funding deficit. Mm-hmm. So now you're seeing people that have health insurance pay more on their premiums, when if it was actually implemented across the nation, it would have been lower. This came from the Supreme Court's ruling when they actually ruled that the states didn't have to do it, because mm-hmm. the original drafting of the bill was mandated for all 50 states, which had an algorithm in there to actually lower the cost across all 50 states. But since certain states haven't passed it, like Missouri, and certain states have, it's an imbalance. And it was the same problem that they had with the website.
Just for the lay person that probably, you know, all of this is mumbo jumbo to them. And what would you bring down to earth about their health care? Say to people that have gotten on the Obamacare and things like that, what is happening with them in terms of their health care? And those are just getting on board with health care that didn't have health care all of their lives.
Well, this is it's actually a huge problem, and it's on the federal level. And the reason I say it's a huge problem, because again, when you have a plan that's drafted for A, B, and C, and B is actually removed, and now you have to go from A to C with no mechanism to transition, is flawed. So it has to be addressed at the federal level. It has to be fixed. That's
You talking about the Obama?
Yeah, the ACA, Affordable Care Act.
Okay.
Now, in Missouri, the Medicaid that Representative Morgan was talking about was something that we should have passed because it had a match with it. Now, when you talk about the overt mm-hmm. plan, it's fundamental funding mechanisms flaws in it, because the states are allowed to opt out. And by the states being allowed to opt out, again, it changes the funding mechanism. So if you're in a state that hasn't passed it, I would urge you to contact your state representatives and your senators to pass it, because that would start to alter the balance of those that are paying on the ACA that have health care for the states that haven't passed it. Basically, the easiest way to explain it is if you have a state that has not passed the ACA, you're paying for health care in other states, and your premiums is going to be higher because they can't fully fund it the way that it was designed to be funded.
How is that working? And I'm going to ask Representative Morgan, Judy Morgan, and how is that going to affect the ones that are, let's say, for instance, doctors? You know, do they elect to say that I don't want to be a part of that Obamacare or anything like that, and they want to go with what they've been doing?
Well, I think first off, we don't have Medicaid expansion in Missouri, so doctors don't—they can't opt in or out right now.
I see.
But I believe doctors do you know, they most of them go in with certain insurance companies. We are still pretty much an insurance based. You know, it's not a Medicare for all. It's not a national health care service. We're still pretty much insurance based. That was one thing that I think Obama wanted to go to a single payer system, something like where everybody was covered under a national health care and everybody would have the right to have health care. But I just don't think he was able to get that. So they came up with something, this Affordable Care Act, but it has covered quite a few additional people. Millions of people can now get the subsidies and be able to have health insurance. And of course, I think one of the greatest things is about the pre-existing conditions. It used to be if you had a pre-existing condition, like if you had cancer, mm-hmm. or if you had diabetes, you know, or if you had heart disease, an insurance company could just flat out say, we're not going to cover you.
Because you've been having.
Right. And so they can't do that anymore. And I think that's really a good thing. And
then from Obamacare?
Yes, that was part of the Affordable Care Act, part of Obamacare. And then the other thing I think is really good is there used to be lifetime caps. So, I mean, if anybody's been in the hospital for very long, they know you can drive up a big bill really fast.
True.
And there used to be caps, so at a certain point, if you had $1 million that had been spent on your health care during your life, you were kicked off your health insurance policy. They can't do that anymore. There are no lifetime caps. I think that's a good thing for the American public.
Remember, if you want to weigh in to this topic, feel free to call 816-931-5534, and you're listening to Jaws of Justice right here on KKFI 90.1 FM. And in the studio, I'm talking with Miss Judy Morgan. She is the 24th District Rep, and Representative Brandon Ellerton of the 22nd District. And so we're talking about criminal justice and health care and the likes. And so if you have a question, feel free to call in and ask them whatever questions that you would like, as long as it's on the topic that we're talking about. So tell us a little bit more about Mr. Ellerton, about what you're doing as well, because I know you're doing, like I mentioned.
I'm going to re-highlight the town hall, because it's extremely important to have the date and the location pulled up. The town hall will be July the 7th from 4 to 6 p.m. at Bruce Watkins Heritage Center. And again, it's dealing with the people that have been in the area of 31st Street, roughly Cleveland over to Lister, 31st Street down to 27th Street, and it's a lot of contamination. DNR will be there, Health and Senior Services will be there. And then we have a couple of interesting things that we'll be doing this summer. I'm currently going in partnership with the Department of Kansas City Parks and Rec, and we'll be doing a community engagement series starting July the 7th. I believe the first park is Seven Oaks Park off of 39th and Jackson, and it will start around 3 to 7. And we will have positive speakers there, artists there, et cetera. It's a community engagement series. We also have 100 Men of Blue Hills, GRRL, and Voices of the People is partnerships with us, so it should be a lot of resources there, a lot of positive people, so we're encouraging people to just have fun in the park. Some of the bills that I've been working on, obviously, is the criminal justice reform bills. A lot of those stalled in committee, but I am blessed to say that this year I got 15 co-sponsored bills passed, and one of the bills the governor was just here yesterday to sign, and that was the sexual exploitation bill that deals with kids, sexual exploitation, et cetera. I don't know what you talked about before I came in.
We did talk about the sex trafficking, okay. And the governor just signed that last week, right?
Yeah. I thought it was a couple of days. I've been out of town, so I thought it was a couple of days.
Yeah, so I was glad to see that was one that took 2 years to pass, but it finally got across the legislative finish line.
Representative Brandon Ellerton was mentioning about some of the town hall meetings and stuff that you were going to have, and I was listening to the date, and I was just hoping that you wasn't going to mention August the 13th. As everyone knows, August the 13th is the Pennymill event coming up at Blue Valley Park, so I had to give a shout out right there.
Yeah, and I would be down there August the 13th.
Great. So, you know, with all of this that's going on, and what are the things that you're trying to accomplish at this town hall and at the parks and partnering with a lot of the other agencies and stuff that you're doing?
Well, with the town hall, it's actually disheartening to me. I actually got involved in this around last year, some information came to me. Then I started holding meetings around April of this year. And the reason I say I'm disheartened, I used to be underneath the belief that when government knew it was an issue and they knew they was liable, government would be willing to address the issue. What I found is that when they know it's an issue, they try to do everything they can to keep that issue quiet. So the contamination that I'm talking about for 31st Street has been going on since 2006. Last year, the Attorney General and Emmanuel Cleaver, Congressman Cleaver, came down here and they walked the area. So it's definitely well documented that the federal government knows because of our federal congressman that was down here. We know our Attorney General knows because he was down here, he walked the scene. We know DNR knows. We know the Kansas City Health Department knows. We know all these agencies knows what's going on, but nobody is willing to communicate with the citizens. Nobody is willing to talk to the citizens over there. There's a lot of people over there that are getting brain cancer. They have been found with benzene in their blood that comes from the gas. They have sewage issues that's coming up out of their toilet sewers, et cetera. Different nervous issues that we know is related to gas leakage, et cetera. And again, all of this is
and being, a lot of people are unaware of these things that are happening right up underneath their nose.
Well, they're unaware of the reasoning. People come outside, they can smell the gas, it's visible. When we had the town hall meeting, it was literally people driving down the street yelling out about different contaminations that they could smell. And a lot of the reporters there actually noted that while they were standing there, they could smell a strong presence of gas. And the biggest issue is actually addressing and talking to citizens, right? I believe that we have a duty, in particular as elected officials, to make sure departments are doing their jobs, but our bureaucrats should be more empathetic and more concerned with working with folks than protecting an institution that is an institution that's only supported because people pay for it.
I understand that you up for re-election, and we definitely need to keep you standing out there, you know, and fighting for the communities. And so I'm excited about that, and I know that you're going to come through with that.
Now we out there August the 2nd for people that are unaware, and I'm saying August the 2nd because we have to start increasing our voter turnout. In primaries, we have to start paying attention, and I know there's a presidential election, but even in non-presidential elections, we have to pay attention. Politics is becoming an institution that only benefits corporations, and it's becoming an institution that only benefits corporations because we're forgetting the power of personhood, and we're forgetting the power of the vote. And it's extremely powerful and important that we pay attention, because this is how you get elected officials that actually represent you, as opposed to those that don't have any concern for you.
Just in case you're just now tuning in and you're in your automobile, and the number that if you want to weigh in on this topic is 816-931-5534.
Melvin, I just wanted to add something, because what Brandon talked about voting, I think, is so important. And somebody just sent me something today with the voter registration deadlines.
Sure.
I think it might be good to let your listeners know that.
Cool.
So for that August 2nd primary that Representative Ellington was talking about, the registration deadline is upon us. It's July 6th.
July 6th.
For that. And then for the November 8th, I believe, is when the general election is. That registration deadline is October 12th.
And I think that overall, the community needs to get at least be aware of some of these things that are happening before it's too late. I would like to use that word, before it's too late.
Can I follow up on what Representative Ellington said about voting in primaries?
Sure,
just to give you an example, in a district like mine that has pretty high voter turnout, probably in a primary about 3,000 to 4,000 people turn out. In a general, it's more like about 16,000. That shows you the difference. And you can look at almost any district across the state, and that's the way it is. But we need folks like Representative Ellington says to show up not only in the general but also in the primary elections.
Some of the other things that we talked about, could we maybe reiterate the fact that we have with the criminal justice and I was listening to the radio this morning, and they was talking about the private prisoners, and that is really being unfair. They're not taking care of the prisoners. Prisoners with diabetes and stuff like that have lost toes and and because they wasn't able to get their medications and things. What do you know anything about that?
We're getting closer. We're not privatized yet. A few years ago in corrections committee, I sit on a lot of criminal justice committees anyway, and one of the correction committees, we had an entity that came in that wanted to have our inmates build houses. One of the first issues and concerns I had for this company was the inmates that are building houses, are they going to be employed with this company when they get released? The answer was no. Are they going to be certified for learning how to build houses while they're in the penitentiary mm-hmm. for this corporation? No. Or would there be any type of recompensation for them? No. So basically, we're getting to a situation in which corrections here is looking at different models to reinstitute pro-slavery as opposed to covert slavery. We just go ahead and make it overt. Slavery with inmates that are actually producing materials and reselling them. And I say it's overt slavery because even if we look at our numbers, in the state of Missouri, over 78% of the inmates is inmates of nonviolent drug offenses. And the majority of those would be so-called minorities. So the privatization of penitentiaries is something that we are slowly migrating to. I don't think it will happen in the time frame that I'm in the body, but I think people should be extremely cognizant. And one of the last caveats I would like to throw in there is the penitentiary system. The penitentiary system was non-existent until after slavery, right? We had jails and we had mechanisms like that. We didn't have penitentiaries, penile systems. Mm-hmm. The penitentiary system definitely has to be checked. When you was mentioning the health concerns, I know personally that we still have all those health concerns in our state facilities with people having diabetes. I'm dealing with one individual that I think is his third time, almost about to lose his leg. Mm-hmm. Had a call up there. He had a hole in his leg, pus coming out of it, et cetera. And he's actually an inmate that has implemented positive programs. So he's not just an inmate that's sitting in there. He's actually somebody that's trying to help people out. Mm-hmm. And he's even denied health care access.
Yeah. Did you want to come in?
Yeah, just privatization where people actually go into these kinds of businesses for profit. I don't think it matters whether it's prisons or it's schools or nursing homes or wherever it is. But whenever you bring privatization in and you say, okay, this business is going to make profit off of this service, the services almost always go down. And you'll see things like what you're seeing in the prisons, where if it's a private prison, then the people, they make profit, so their money is going into their pockets rather than into the services for the people who are in prison, whether it's health services or their food or counseling services or whatever it is.
Yeah, because they was mentioning about that the people that they employ, they're untrained, they just don't know. And they don't have anything in place or set up for those guards and the various supposed to be people that are. I didn't catch that.
I couldn't see it either.
and we definitely want to keep people with the knowledge of that they can weigh in on this topic, and that's 816-931-5534. That's 816-931-5534. And we're talking about the prisoners and the unfairness of these private prisoners. And I think they mushrooming up, for lack of a better word, all over the country because it is a profit.
Right.
And so, but they're not interested in the prisoners. And so they just want to house them. Go ahead.
Well, that's my issue. It's profits on both sides. Corrections generates, just commissary alone generates millions of dollars, right? If you look at each institution that we have in Missouri, you're looking at $150,000, $110,000 just coming out of the commissary. Last year, DLC applied to start charging inmate sales taxes on commissary. So that's actually going to go up even more. So now you have a penitentiary that's getting profits off of food. So you take toilet paper, a toothpaste that costs a dollar, you charge $3 for it. Like Representative Morgan was saying, when you privatize stuff, you have issues. But we have to look at corrections across the board. And why do we pay so much for corrections? only to have a high recidivism rate, as opposed to doing things to actually reacclimate those that have committed crimes so they can reassimilate into society, such as educational programs, ethic training programs, civics, and different things that we can actually be doing with inmates while they're locked up, as opposed to just warehousing them and then magically expecting them not to commit a crime when they come back out to a low-income, impoverished, isolated area. It's a recipe for defeat and failure. And if we actually wanted a correction system that rehabilitated people, we would restore them to their nature. And that's what rehabilitation means, to restore the useful nature. And we're not doing that across the board with corrections.
We're going to, at this time, we're going to have to pause to make our announcement. But remember that if you want to weigh in on this topic, 816-931-5534, right here on KKFI 90.1. And Charles of Justice. I'm your host, Melvin Merritt. And
now, the calendar for June 27th, 2016. At this month's Sisterhood Academy, Communities Creating Opportunity will bring in regional leaders for a public conversation about how women can impact local communities through civic engagement in this year's general election. Following this strategic meeting, you will be able to play a key role during CCO's fall campaign within the following areas: voter registration, voter education, and voter mobilization. This month's event will be held today, Monday, June 27th, from 5:30 to 7 p.m. at 2400 Troost Avenue, KCMO. CCO's Sisterhood Academy meets every fourth Monday of the month. If you have any questions, email them at info@cco.org. The first annual Employment Team Entry-Level Job and Resource Fair will be held Tuesday, June 28th, 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. at the Jack Reardon Convention Center, 520 Minnesota Avenue, Kansas City, Kansas. The first hour is reserved for pre-registered job seekers. This multi-agency sponsored event encourages veterans, the homeless, and the formerly incarcerated, as well as the general public, to participate. Over 60 registered employees will be seeking eligible candidates for work. My name is Jeff Humfeld, reminding you that these events and more can be found on the Jaws of Justice Radio Facebook page, as well as the Jaws of Justice Radio page on the KKFI website, kkfi.org. For next week's show, we are hoping to have an interview with Jill Stein, presidential candidate of the Green Party. If she is not available, we will be playing a couple of selections from our archives about deaths in custody and police shootings. You are listening to 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.
And I'm your host, Melvin Merritt, and in the studio with me this morning is Miss Judy, I should say Representative Judy Morgan, and she's the 24th District Rep. And also in the studio with me is Brandon Ellerton, he's the 22nd District Rep. And we've been talking about the various bills that they're trying to implement. But while we were having that break, we had a chance to talk about some things. And one of the questions that I'm going to ask is about what's happening down in Florida and actually all over the country with the gun issues and with some of the bills that you guys have passed, or at least not passed, but put out on the floor. And tell us a little bit about, especially with the guns.
Right. We passed a bill. It's Senate Bill 656. I voted against it. We passed it in the last session, and it started out as a really non-controversial bill that all it was going to do was say that you couldn't charge more than $100 to get your conceal and carry permit, that you couldn't have it charge more than $100. It got expanded to where you no longer have to have a permit to have conceal and carry. You don't have to take the firearms training because that's part of the permit process. We passed Stand Your Ground. We were the first state since the Florida killing in 2012, I believe it was. We're the first state to pass Stand Your Ground laws. It also had included guns on campus and guns on public transportation. Those two parts were taken out. That bill came to us in the last 2 hours of session. The last 2 hours of session, that bill was passed on the last day of session. And it's a bill that, you know, most people around the country, they want permits for conceal and carry. They think it's good for people to take some kinds of firearms training before they carry a gun.
Sure.
I know a lot. Most of the people in my district sure don't want Stand Your Ground. They found that in Stand Your Ground, most of the victims, 78% of them were not carrying a weapon. Mm. So they were out there just like Trayvon Martin. He
right.
did not have a weapon. He had a bag of Skittles,
yeah.
and that's all he had. Mm. And they found that's the case in most cases in Stand Your Ground, that the victims end up, the killers get off, and the victims were not even carrying a weapon.
Even though what you were saying about, you know, that you stand for the caring, especially for decent people that want to carry weapons, and when they go to these gun shows and stuff like that, they don't have to pass any test or anything.
Right.
All they have to do is have the cash,
right?
And they don't have to do anything. And but you know, I heard somebody saying it's turning into a Wild Wild West type thing. You know, where people are walking up with a holster around their waist and carrying a pistol. And you don't know whether or not the individual have PTSD or not, you know, and yet that person is walking in a restaurant or something like that. And so what are your thoughts about that, even though that you are for decent citizens carrying
right.
concealed weapons?
Right. And I think that's very true. I think all of us know that in this country that people really, they want the right to self-defense.
Sure.
They want, many people like to hunt. Many people like to collect guns, and I don't think anybody who is for sensible gun regulations is saying that we should take guns away from people. You know, when President Obama was elected, a lot of people, oh, he's going to take away all of our guns. We have 300 million guns in the country. We have basically about as many guns as we have people in this country. But not every person in the country owns guns. There's basically about, I think, a third of the population that owns most of the guns. So no, nobody's saying that we don't want people to have the right to self-defense. But what is wrong with saying that you have to go, you have to get a permit and you have to go through some firearms training to be able to carry a weapon? You've got to go pass a test to drive a car.
But all respect, what about these assault weapons that they're coming up with? And those are the ones that's so dangerous. You know, they're meant for the military battlefield.
Right. We used to have an assault weapons ban. It actually expired in 2004, and they have not been able to get it passed since. Congressman Cleaver, I read something he said was so sad. It was at the House sit-in when they mm-hmm. were, and a lady showed him a picture of her daughter, and he says, "Wow, she's gorgeous." And then she showed the congressman a picture of her daughter
afterwards,
who had been killed with an AK-47, and he was just devastated by seeing that. And it was not a mass murder. This was one where she was just killed in Washington D.C. Of course, we know that mass murders like the one in Orlando, mm-hmm. that he had an AK-47 and other kinds of weapons to kill 49 people.
So,
I think there should be a ban. I support a ban on the assault weapons.
And what are some of the other bans? What about the ones that are talking about that they're not for people carrying concealed weapons, even though that they are decent citizens and they need to protect themselves? And I'm for that,
right,
especially when you're going into a theater or something like that. Somebody with some sense maybe need to have some type of weapon. But the thing that I wanted to comment on is when the people that was in Florida at this gay bar,
mm-hmm.
and usually with that many people and one person in the dark, seemed like they could have jumped up and overpowered this individual. So, and maybe that's just something that is off your record, mm-hmm. but what are your thoughts about it?
Well, from what I understand, an AK-47 can shoot a lot of bullets very quickly. And so even if somebody else had been in there and could have taken him, I think there was an armed security officer that tried to engage with him, and he, I don't know, I'm not sure if he was killed or if he just was
you know, wasn't able to, the shooter actually ran away or what happened. But I think that, that with those assault weapons, you can just kill so many so fast that even if somebody else has a gun, you're going to have a lot of people dead by the time that person shoots them.
If you want to weigh in on this, you're listening to KKFI 90.1. I'm your host, Melvin Marin, and in the studio with me I'm talking with is Judy Morgan. She's the 24th District Rep, and Brandon Ellerton, the 22nd District Rep as well. Call in 816-931-5534 and weigh in on this gun issue that we're talking about, and what are your thoughts about that? And so you can call in and ask either one of my guests. Go ahead if
now,
you want to.
Now I got a slightly different view. I do believe that we have to have regulation and training. I just got back from Branson yesterday, so I'm going to read a sign that I seen before I was leaving. Warning, you are entering redneck area. You may encounter American flags, armed citizens, the Lord's Prayer, and country music. Proceed at your own risk. And I said all that to go to the fundamental. yeah, I thought it was kind of funny.
Gosh.
Whoa. You had to take the picture. I was like, okay, I've never seen that sign before in my life. But
Where'd you saw it in Branson?
Yeah, in Branson, right before I left.
We have a caller online, so we want to get that caller in, and he wants to weigh in on it. Go ahead, caller.
Yeah, I'm just concerned about, well, first of all, I appreciate the program, and you got some good guests, and the guy that's, I think he's some kind of politician. He was making some good comments.
Can we ask your name? Can we
ask reform?
Huh? Can we ask your name?
Jim. Name is Jim, coming out of Kansas, Missouri.
Okay. Thank you, Jim.
Well, I ain't finished yet, but my point is a lot of the prisoners, when they get out, they have children, and they still have child support payments. And I'm just concerned that the prison should make some kind of way where prisoners can make some kind of income or have some kind of fun. So when they get out, they don't have to just, you know, be a, like you said, a bum or stand on the street with a sign, where they can have some kind of income or something to get them established until they can get the income and all that. Because the whole system is hypocritical, because they want you to feel anger for the crimes they commit, but we turn around and commit crimes as a society against the prisoners when they get out. And we don't, you know, like you said, all the problems they have with health, and they don't get decent medical care. The criminals seem like are the ones who are making the money off of it. So the whole system is just corrupt to me, if you ask me.
So do you have a question? But point is good.
Well, no, I got exactly where he was coming from. And it's one of the main issues. And again, my name is Representative Brandon Ellington. And when you talk about corrections is a cash cow. It has nothing to do with helping people reassimilate. Even when you talk about the lack there of gainable skills that you have in there. Currently in corrections, we do nothing to make sure people are employable. I have a bill that would mandate that DOC, Department of Corrections, certifies and binds any inmate that's in there that's working, right? So if they're doing IT work, you better certify them. Mm-hmm. If they're doing bondable work, you better work with a company upon release so they can be bonded, such mm-hmm. as plumbing or things of this nature. This has been one of the hardest bills I have to pass, because some people understand the ideology. In committee one day, one of the representatives stood up and he said, were you trying to turn the penitentiaries into community colleges? No, I'm trying to do what the word rehabilitation means. So if you have somebody that comes in here and they have no employable skills, then you need to rehabilitate them, because that's what the mantra of the penitentiary is. It's a rehabilitation center, right? That's what we call it. Somebody comes in here and they have a social issue, you need to work on that. Drug issue, you need to address that. You don't just warehouse people and put them back out unless you want the desired outcome to continue. In the state of Missouri, we have a 54.4% increase in recidivism rate after the third year. So that means that the first and second year that's upon somebody's release, they're trying to get jobs. They're trying to do things that would keep them from returning to the penitentiary. Upon that third year, they start to feel hopelessness because of the economic constraints around them. And more often than not, you're in an isolated, poverty-induced area. Like, I live off 40th and Prospect. If I didn't have the ability to fund myself, I would be extremely angry because of my circumstances and my surroundings. Mm-hmm. Right, everything I see around me is pretty much destroyed. deteriorating. So I don't have anything positive necessarily to keep me positive. So I think if we have corrections and we're going to keep the corrections mantra, then we have to make sure that corrections are rehabilitating people. And this goes to the fundamental basis of taxpayers. To educate somebody in the state of Missouri is like $8.74 a day. To lock somebody up in a penitentiary in the state of Missouri is like $57.65. So either we can spend $8 and save $48 or $47, or we can spend $47 to make sure that we have a current population that's going to be nothing but transitional. And I think that corrections right now wants to keep that model of transitional people coming back and forth through their doors.
That's what I was just going to say, that the way the system is set up is basically is to get the guy, once they have been released, there's nothing left for them but to enter back into prison.
Could I say one more thing, too? And this was I had a Republican come to me. He was not trying to be funny. He was not trying to be racist. He was being serious. He came to me. He was like, Ellington, about the certification and bonding bill. He was like, Ellington, good bill, but you're not thinking. I was like, what do you mean I'm not thinking? He was like, well, you're only thinking about how it's going to affect people in your area. You're not thinking about how it's going to affect people in my area, because, see, we have 5 penitentiaries, and this is our largest employer. So in order for you to get me to vote on this and to talk positively about this, you have to figure out a way that I can articulate it where I'm not standing up here talking about I'm going to take jobs from my people.
Thanks, caller, for that. Would you want to come in, Judy, on that?
Well, you know, I don't think there's anything wrong with having a prison like a community college. I mean, I think that's kind of what I agree with Representative Ellington. You know, we should be trying to give people the skills, whether it's a trade or it's some kind of college experience, that they can perform a job. Because if they don't have money, if they can't support themselves once they get out of prison, where do you think they're going to go?
That's true.
They don't have a whole lot of choices. So
that's a good point, too.
And I have, my husband was in the field of criminal justice for years, and a couple of folks worked for him who had been in prison. And actually, they got their college degree while they were in prison. Mm-hmm. And then they became gainfully employed, and they gave back to the community. And I used to teach, I was a teacher, and I taught a class on criminal justice in high school at Central High School in Lincoln. And those guys would come speak to my class and talk about their experiences. I mean, they were giving back a lot to society. So I think that's great if you provide college for folks in prison who want to make something out of themselves.
You see how heavy our guest is out there, listeners. So remember, you can weigh in on this 816-931-5534. And we're talking about some of the gun issues and some of the problems and some of the pros and cons of the gun issues. And what are your thoughts? You can call in again at 816-931-5534 and weigh in on this. Some of the other issues as it relate to guns and just the violence that we're experiencing across the country. And then we want to, it's almost like we want to take the guns out, but then put them in there. It's something I don't understand that.
And I really don't think anybody, I really truly don't think those individuals who support, you know, common sense gun regulations want to take guns away from law-abiding citizens. They don't. I mean, I really do think we all understand that people deserve to, I mean, as part of our Constitution, you've got a right to a gun for self-defense and, you know, hunting, other purposes like we talked about. So I know a lot of people really think that's what, you know, those of us who support gun regulation, that we want to just completely eliminate guns. In fact, it was real interesting on the floor last year. One of our biggest gun regulation proponents in the legislature is Representative Stacey Newman. And one of the, somebody on the floor asked her, you know, what do you want to do? Take guns away? You want to take guns away from everybody. She says, no, that is not what I want to do. I just want some common sense gun regulations, like universal background checks, like what you were talking about. Mm-hmm. You know, people have to get a criminal background check at a federally licensed gun shop. Why shouldn't they get that at a gun show or on the internet? So I think that's what we're saying. We just want some common sense. We don't want to take guns away from law-abiding citizens.
What about your thoughts about people that gun-abiding citizens, but they have mental issues? Because they say basically the people with handguns commit suicide. And that's the biggest issue right there, opposed to homicide.
No, you're exactly right.
And so it's a problem there, and it's back again. But, take gun, give away.
But stats are funny. you're not going to get people sitting at home in their bathroom that's going to blow their head off with an AK-47 because it's uncomfortable, right? So the majority of suicides is going to be handguns because they're easily concealable. I think we have to be cautious when it comes to the gun debate and the regulation. I do believe it has to be regulation, but let's say that we wanted to put a banter out there that anybody with a mental health issue we're going to go after. Well, that becomes profiling. And what's the degree and the level? And after the caller, I...
We have a caller on the line, and he wants or she wants to weigh in on that. Caller, go ahead.
Hi. I was just curious about the city and the state working together on the gun laws. Are the council, are they lobbying the state to, for changes?
Actually, our mayor has been very strongly lobbying the state to allow the city to have its, you know, to... For instance, when they passed open carry a couple of years ago, which says a person can openly carry a gun anywhere, Mayor James actually came down to the legislature and lobbied and said, you know, Kansas City, we don't need that in Kansas City. If you want to allow that in other parts of the state, that's fine. But can we at least in our city be able to pass the gun regulations we think are appropriate? But the legislation was passed such that no city can pass any kind of gun regulation that's any stricter than what's at the state level. So we have to adhere to what's at the state level, and that's what's in law right now. But our city officials really have been good about trying to say we think we should have some say over what happens in our own communities.
Carla, we have about 2 minutes left on the broadcast.
Thank
Go
you.
Ahead. Thank you for calling in. One of the things I wanted to comment with Representative Brandon Ellerton that said that most people that it would shoot themselves with a Uzi, but I don't think that's how that people commit suicide. They usually commit suicide with a handgun.
No, that's what I said. It's less likely for somebody to take a machine gun or an AK-47 and go in the bathroom and commit suicide because of the convenience of a handgun. So that's why I was saying the stats are not as accurate as they appear. Even if we look at the stats of mass shootings, we've had a lot of highlights with the mass shootings that happens, but they're concentrated in areas in which somebody that is mentally ill or somebody that is just angry knows they have no resistance, right? So I know if I go to a movie theater, there's nobody in there with a gun, I can shoot up. I know if I go to elementary school, there's nobody with a gun, I can shoot up. So I'm saying we have to be more cautious and aware of what we give away. Even when we talk about the proliferation of crimes in inner city, you hear some of my colleagues say we have to get rid of guns or we have to put more restrictions because of the amount of murders in inner city. Well, the murders in inner city are not related to the guns. They're related to the social economic conditioning and the lack of conscious knowledge of oneself to certain extents. When we talk about certain cultures, that's where the proliferation of the murders are coming from. The concentration of poverty and anger, it makes a recipe. It has nothing to do with the ethnicity of the people there. And the weapons are second nature, because if I don't have a gun and I'm in a hopeless situation, I'm going to use a baseball bat or a knife.
We're at the end of our show, and I'm just grateful for the callers that called in. And you have been listening to Judy Morgan, she's the 24th District Rep, and Brandon Ellerton, and I have been your host, Melvin Merritt. And I just wanted to comment, but I'm not, because my time is out. So, thanks.
The views and opinions of this program are those of its host and guests, and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of 90.1 FM, KKFI, Midcoast Radio Project, or its staff and volunteers.
It's the 420 Drug War News.
One of the longest serving, if you will, reporters for the Drug Truth Network has gone off and, accomplished much beyond what we have done here. And that is my good friend, Mr. Phil Smith. How are you, Phil?
Fine and dandy, Dean. How are you?
I'm good. We had that horrible shooting the other day, but... The progress in the drug war seems to be gaining traction, I think, as we speak. Your thought there, sir?
Well, we are making progress, but at the same time, there's still a whole lot of drug war going on in and out every day, 24/7, 365 days a year. just a couple of weeks ago, I wrote a story about all the drug war killings in May. There were seven of them. These are people who died as a direct result of police engaged in drug law enforcement activities. You know, not everyone who gets killed by the cops in the drug war is an innocent victim. Let's make that clear off the bat. Of the seven who were killed in May, four were armed. Two of them were actually engaged in shootouts with police. So, you know, it's kind of hard to cry too much over people who get in shootouts with police and get killed. But two more of the people who were killed in May were people who were killed after police said they attempted to run them over in their vehicles. I'm always skeptical of these stories. There is typically no surveillance video or no witnesses to the police accounts. And it always strikes me that these guys who are allegedly trying to run over police might just as easily be merely trying to get away. That said, they're still dead. Now, there was one story I didn't get in my list of many drug war killings, and that's because the police in Tulsa, Oklahoma, didn't release any information on it until a Tulsa newspaper saw documents for a search warrant related to this death. And that's the killing of a guy named Ollie Lee Brooks. He was a poor, elderly, homeless black guy. And what went down in his case was he had managed to scrape up enough money to buy some crack and get a room at the Motel 8 in East Tulsa. And he was sitting there minding his own business, doing his drug of choice in his motel room when police knocked on his door, opened the door, saw drug paraphernalia, attempted to arrest him, got into a scuffle with no body cameras, of course, and tased him repeatedly, and he died.
Again, that was Phil Smith, reporter with Drug War Chronicle, Stop the Drug War, and sometimes the Drug Truth Network. Dean Becker, drugtruth.net.
Ready? One, two, three. What am I gonna do now? Am I gonna make it? Some way, somehow. Well, maybe I'm not.
We hope you enjoyed today's show and that we leave you with something to think about, something to talk to your neighbors about, and a reason to get involved. As always, the opinions expressed are those of the host and guest of Jaws of Justice Radio, not of KKFI, the Midcoast Radio Project Incorporated, its staff, or volunteers. You can find our calendar of events and a link to our show episodes and podcasts on the Jaws of Justice Radio Facebook page. If you have a show idea or want to help produce Jaws of Justice Radio, email us at jawsofjusticeradio@yahoo.com. And you can always listen to us live and find podcasts of our show on the KKFI website, that is kkfi.org. We thank our engineer, Beth Pike, for her work today. My name is Melvin Merritt, asking you to tune in for the rest of our 9 a.m. weekday lineup with Law and Disorder on Tuesday, Alternative Radio on Wednesday, Tell Somebody with Tom Claymer on Thursday, and Between the Lines at 9 a.m., followed by Bioneers at 9:30 a.m. on Fridays. Up next is Beautician Blues with Luscious Lim, and at noon, Arts Magazine with Michael Ho. Stick around for jazz and blues in the afternoon and Eco Radio KC at 6 p.m. Then round out your day with the spicy Latin sounds of Sabor Latino and Fiesta Musical.
Well, I don't really want to be alright, it'll be okay. Well, I'm gonna make my world a better place. Go keep that smile on my face. Go teach myself